Hello, everybody, and welcome in to eBible Fellowship's continuing Bible studies into the book of 1 Samuel, heard at this very same time, Monday through Friday. And we thank you for being with us wherever you are and however you're listening to us, either through eBible Fellowship's webcast audio or through Skype or perhaps through Pal Talk or even over the phone. And we pray that the Lord's blessings will be with us over the next 30 minutes or so as we now prepare to open our Bibles and introduce Chris McCann. Good evening, Chris.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our Bible study in 1 Samuel. Tonight's study is study number 40, and we're going to begin by reading 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 18, and I'll read 18 through 21. But Samuel ministered before Jehovah, being a child, girded with a linen ephod. Moreover, his mother made him a little coat and brought it to him from year to year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. And Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife and said, Jehovah give thee seed of this woman for the loan which is lent to Jehovah. And they went unto their own home. And Jehovah visited Hannah, so that she conceived and bare three sons and two daughters, and the child Samuel grew before Jehovah. Now, in our previous study, we noticed once again the similarity between what we're reading in 1 Samuel 2 and the Gospel of Luke. We, of course, saw earlier that Hannah's prayer of rejoicing is very similar to Mary's prayer or praise of God, her song of praise. And now the language concerning the child Samuel growing before Jehovah is very similar to the language of Jesus as he grew as a young man. Now, verse 26 of 1 Samuel 2 says, and the child Samuel grew on and was in favor both with Jehovah and also with men. And we compare that with Luke chapter 2 and verse 52, the last verse of that chapter. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. And we were just noting yesterday, we're in our last study, how that Jesus was, when he entered into the human race in the first century, actually he was born in 7 BC, and then his life moved into the first century, but he was born on the Old Testament side of the cross, and Jesus was eternal God at all times. When he was conceived, when he was the little tiny baby in his mother's womb, Jesus was eternal God and possessed all the attributes of eternal God. When Jesus was born and was in his mother Mary's arms, he was eternal God and possessed all the attributes of eternal God, including infinite wisdom. Now, the account here in Luke 2 is describing an occurrence that happened when Jesus was 12 years old. And from that point, God indicates that he increased in wisdom and stature. That is, he continued to grow physically. And of course, he was only 12. He would grow a few more years, like any other normal teenager. But the question we were looking at was why or how could it be that Christ, who is infinite in wisdom, could increase in wisdom? And that doesn't seem to make any sense. And it's a verse like this is one of the reasons that people think that Jesus did not know the day or hour. as one verse seems to indicate. They think that yes, he was God, but in some way he withheld information from himself. Of course, that doesn't make any sense at all, but that's the reasoning that some have developed. And yet, what is the answer to this verse? If Jesus was eternal God and possessed all wisdom, how could he increase in wisdom? And we went to to 2 Timothy chapter 3 to find that same word, increase. And I mentioned that this verse will help us to understand what God has in view. It says in 2 Timothy 3 and verse 13, but evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. The word wax is the same Greek word translated as increased in Luke 2:52. So this is telling us evil men and seducers shall increase worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. And we know this is true. This is the case in the world, that men do tend to grow in their wickedness. They do tend to become more evil as they get older, as they live longer. And it's actually very common in the world that evil men and seducers increase, and they do more evil as time goes on for them. Well, how does that help us understand that Jesus, as a boy, increased in wisdom and stature? Well, it helps us once we think about the nature of man. The Bible tells us, for instance, concerning children or concerning babies. Back in the Psalms, in Psalm 58, we read in verse 3, the wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. And who is wicked? Well, all are wicked. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. There is none righteous, the Bible says. No, not one. And the wicked individual goes astray or is estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. Now, how is that possible for a baby who we know cannot speak for months, sometimes for over a year and a half? Babies cannot speak. How could it be possible that as soon as a baby is born, that's what God is saying, they go astray, that is, they go away from his commandments. God says, speak the truth and speak lies. What is he saying? Is this verse not telling us the truth itself? No, this verse, of course, is true. It's part of the Bible, and the whole Bible is true. Well, then how can a baby go astray as soon as it's born, speaking a lie? And the answer is that God is not looking at the verbalization of the baby. No, that'll be a little while. That'll be when they get to be 2 or 2.5 or 3 and they learn to talk. And how long is it after a baby learns to talk before they end up speaking a lie? It's not very long at all once mom or dad asks the little boy or girl, did you do that? And they say, no, I didn't do that, or just no. When they did do it, they speak a lie, and they don't have to be taught. It comes naturally because This is the nature of man. We're born, we're conceived in sin, we're born sinners. Just like that example that Mr. Camping used to use all the time, and it was a very good example because it was good because it really shows us our own nature. We look at a little baby and we see innocence. We see a cuddly, cute little baby. Oh, isn't it beautiful? And it's so innocent. And, well, yes, from our perspective, and that's how it is. But from God's perspective, he sees a sinner because the mother was a sinner and the father was a sinner and the baby comes from his parents. And as it says in the book of Job, you cannot bring a clean from unclean. If your parents are unclean, guess what? You're going to be unclean. It's an impossibility to bring a clean vessel through unclean vessels like the mother and father. And so the baby is born unclean. And that's what God is indicating when he says it's born speaking lies. And Mr. Camping used to use the example of baby vipers or serpents. When two snakes have babies, what are those little brood of vipers? What are they? They are snakes. They will grow up to be snakes just like their parents. And that's how it is with children, with little babies who become toddlers, who become young boys and girls and teens and adults. They grow up to be snakes, spiritually speaking. They become they grow into their uncleanness that they've always been unclean. But as they develop, they begin to show it more, to give more evidence of it. And yet God knows it from the very beginning. When the baby's in the womb and when the baby is born, as soon as it be born, God says they go astray speaking lies. Well, not verbally, but in their heart they are speaking. And this is what another psalm tells us in Psalm 14. It says in verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Now, is that true? Is that true that there's no God? No, that's a lie. The fact is there is a God. But here the fool, and the fool would be an unsafe individual, is speaking, but not necessarily outwardly. Actually, this verse is telling us he's making this statement in his heart. And that is deep down within. And this could be, it doesn't have to be verbalized at all. It's an inner thought. It's in the subconscious mind or in the deep recesses of the individual where he is saying, there is no God. No, I'll be my own God. I'll run my own life. I'll do whatever I want to do. You know, that what is behind that type of thinking? What's behind that type of attitude that so many people have? Do people consult with God? Well, only God's elect do, of course, but most people don't. Before they do things, they just do what they want to do. And the underlying reason for that could be that they're saying in their heart, there is no God. Why waste time? Why bother going to him? I'll make my own decisions. And that's a lie. And that is the nature of man due to our fall into sin. We're born speaking lies in our very nature, in our spiritually dead heart or soul. we speak lies, and God knows it. But when you look at the baby, well, it's a cute, cuddly, innocent little baby. But as it grows, it will soon be speaking literally, outwardly, lies. And see, that's how that verse helps us in 2 Timothy 3:13. Evil men and seducers wax worse and worse. They increase worse and worse. So the Bible tells us that all are sinners, that everyone who's unsaved is in their sin and evil and wicked and a transgressor of the law of God. This is what the Bible tells us. And yet there's no evidence of that to the outward observer, to mankind, except as the baby grows. And now the baby begins to grow and begins to increase in lying, and maybe it adds stealing, and maybe other sins are thrown into the mix. And soon the true nature of the baby is becoming more and more known. They're waxing worse and worse, and now people all around begin to understand the true character of this person, which it may have taken many, many years for it to become as developed as it is later in life. And yet all that's taken place, it's not that that person became evil when they were 15 or became evil when they were 30. They were always evil, is what the Bible says. It's just a manifestation of that evil that's in view. And that's what Luke 2:52 is telling us. And let's go back there and think about it again, where it says, "And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men." Now, Jesus is without sin. He has perfect wisdom. And yet as a baby, he did confine himself to human form. He took upon him the nature of man, and he grew just like any other child, and he allowed himself to be put under the constraints of our physical limitations, where he did not speak as soon as he was born. He allowed himself to develop these things, and that's all part of growing in stature and into physically into a man. And so all that infinite wisdom could not be expressed when he was a baby. It could not be expressed when he was a toddler. But slowly as he began to grow, and now at the age of 12, he's in the temple. And let's read this again in Luke 2. It says in verse 46, "And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers." That is, as they're speaking to this young boy, can you imagine their amazement that they're talking to a 12-year-old and they're beginning to glimpse infinite wisdom? And they can't believe it. Now, if Jesus had wandered into the temple at the age of 2, he probably could have just as dumbfounded them as he is at 12. But God decided to wait and wait until this particular age in order to reveal some of that infinite wisdom to these doctors of the law. And so in that sense, people are looking at Christ, these outward observers, and they're saying, oh my, isn't he getting wise? Isn't he really growing in wisdom? And he's not grown in wisdom. He's just displaying the wisdom that's always been there. And so too, after this encounter in the temple, when Jesus went on to be a teenager and a young man, he would display further wisdom in his life. And people are seeing this. You see, they're recognizing what has always been there, just as we recognize the evil in men as they grow and are given opportunity to reveal what's inside them. And that's the meaning of this. It has nothing to do with the idea that Christ is learning something or that he lacked wisdom. It has nothing to do with that. It's just that he's putting it on display. And then finally, when it's time for him to go about that period of ministry for 3.5 years, then he will put it on even a far greater level of display as he speaks parables and as he confounds the Pharisees again and again as they try to entrap him and so on. It's not that he could not have done this at any age, but it's all according to God's timetable. All right, well, let's go back to 1 Samuel 2 and we'll read from verses 22 through 26. Now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And he said unto them, why do ye such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. Ye make Jehovah's people to transgress. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against Jehovah, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because Jehovah would slay them. And the child Samuel grew on and was in favor both with Jehovah and also with men. And we saw that, we read that verse earlier, so we won't really deal with that. And we'll look at verses 22 through 25. And Eli was very old. How old was he? Well, it says in 1 Samuel 4, and this would be a little bit of time later. We're not exactly sure how much later. But it says in 1 Samuel 4:15, now Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were dim that he could not see. So at the time when the Ark of the Covenant is taken into the land of the Philistines, at that time Eli is 98. That's also the year that he will die. And so he is a very old man. He's in his 90s at this point. I think we can gather in 1 Samuel 2. He's at least in his 90s. And so his sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are perhaps older than we would have thought. And Phinehas, we also read later, is married, or he would soon get married, and these men were priests, so they had to at least be into their 20s and probably older than that. And so Eli, who was very old. And that language of being very old is used of individuals like Abraham and others. It's actually used of faithful men often. It doesn't mean that Eli was a faithful man, but when we do find God using this language, in some cases, it's referring to true believers. Even though I don't think it necessarily means that Eli was a true believer, Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel. You know, the sins of Hophni and Phinehas were not light sins. It was not a light matter that they had perverted the sacrificial offerings by taking flesh to roast by force. And now God is going to fill us in on other evil dealings that they were involved with. And these men were the spiritual leaders of Israel. Eli was the chief priest, and his sons would have had high positions of authority. And so their sins did not only impact themselves and their families, and not only even the city of Shiloh and the tabernacle, but since they had high positions of spiritual rule in Israel, their sins were a cause of trouble to all Israel. And Eli heard about it. The sins of his sons were well known, apparently. And, of course, we can see how they would be when they would send their servant to take by force the meat from those going to sacrifice. People came from all Israel to sacrifice. So that particular sin would have become widely known. And now God goes on to say in verse 22, another sin, and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And, these kinds of sins are very difficult to keep quiet. And it doesn't even seem that Eli's sons were making any attempt to keep it quiet. They didn't lay with a woman, but women, plural. And God has nothing good to say about that in the Bible. If we go to Deuteronomy 22, and there the laws are given concerning adultery, and there are several laws concerning it. In Deuteronomy 22, verse 22, if a man be found lying with a woman married to a husband, then they shall both of them die, both the man that lay with the woman and the woman. So shalt thou put away evil from Israel. If a damsel that is a virgin be betrothed unto a husband, and a man find her in the city and lie with her, then ye shall bring them both out unto the gate of that city, and ye shall stone them with stones that they die. The damsel, because she cried not, being in the city, and the man, because he has humbled his neighbor's wife, so thou shalt put away evil from among you. But if a man find a betrothed damsel in the field, and the man force her and lie with her, then the man only that lay with her shall die. So this is just a few verses of many that could be read where God speaks about laying with a woman, and it has very grievous consequences, grievous penalty. It was not a light thing. And, you know, today in our culture and art, actually it might be the whole world by now, in the world, in our modern world society, it's a light thing. It's not a big deal to have sexual relations with another person outside of marriage. And yet in the Bible, in the Bible, that is a terrible sin. It is not a light thing to God. And God takes note of the sin of fornication, the sin of adultery. It is sin, number one. We should at least mention that from time to time, because so much of television, movies, and just the news every day has lost sight of that. They've lost track of that. They don't regard it as a sinful act for two people to live together without marriage, or for two people to be with one another, to lie with one another without marriage. But the Bible does, God does, and we have to start there as we look at these two sons of Belial, is what God called them in verse 12. These two men who knew not the Lord. One evidence, one indicator of not knowing the Lord is being loose, or it's being free in sexual relations with other people. And of course, that's a big evidence that the world gives, that it knows not the Lord. Well, we'll pick up this account tomorrow, and we'll try to get into the spiritual application of the sins of the sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas.
You've been listening to eBible Fellowship's Chris McCann with his continuing studies into the book of 1 Samuel. These studies are heard every Monday through Friday night at this very same time over Pal Talk, over Skype, over eBible Fellowship's webcast audio, or over the phone. Lord willing, we'll have another Bible study for you tomorrow night into the book of 1 Samuel. And until then, may the Lord's perfect will be done. Good night.